The ancient legends speak of the coming of light and acknowledge the blossoming of light upon darkness as the precursor of all life. You have heard these words before. In the beginning, when God created the heavens and earth, the earth was a formless void, and darkness covered the face of the deep, while a wind from God swept over the face of the waters. Then God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And God saw that the light was good. And God separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, and the first day. Before there was light, there was darkness and wind, and that too was good, for these ancients believed that their good God had created it. And the earth is made so there is evening and there is morning, an alternation of light and dark. There is more. The seasons of the year bring longer nights and shorter days, then shorter nights and longer days, at least in these latitudes. Light, its increase and decrease, occupied the attention of our ancestors in Europe, ancestors who looked deep into the world of nature around them to see signs of coming day and signs of coming spring. Most of those European ancestors lived farther north than we are. The Manchester Airport is at about the same latitude as the Pyrenees Mountains that form the border between Spain and France. They looked at the sun, they looked at the stars. In what is now Ireland, there is an ancient stone temple where the room in which people would have gathered is illuminated only at dawn on the day of the winter solstice. We do not know what meaning the solstice event had for them, only that it was worth the trouble to design and build this special chamber. Our European ancestors looked at the habits of creatures and marked the signs of life in the time of winter dormancy, when the badger would emerge from winter sleep, for instance, right around this time of year. They celebrated the turning of the year towards spring as days grew longer and lambs were born, even before there were new green shoots to welcome the emergence of bears and the return of birds. These matters of light and dark occupied the attention of our ancestors. These ancestors came to place values of good and bad upon light and dark. It is customary to blame the Persians and later the Greeks for polarizing the world of Western thought into two sets of energies, but I suspect everybody was doing it. For instance, light and dark are behind the Chinese yang and yin. Yang is the light, active, male, hard, outward-moving part. Yin is dark, receptive, female, soft, inward-turning. And somehow the yang became good, and the yin became bad. At least for the Chinese, in the symbolic representation of yin and yang, the two energies are enclosed in a circle, indicating a wholeness, the wholeness that requires both. The Persians and the Greeks made the same move. Active, light, male, hard, outward moving, that's good. Dark, receptive, female, soft, inward turning, that's bad. And they left off the circle that in Chinese wisdom encloses both in a single pole. This polarization affected spiritual practice, for there are divine energies associated with both light and dark. Light, the active, male, hard, and outward moving, is associated with what we call transcendence, moving spiritually outward beyond the confines of our own small individual selves to come into contact with the holy that is beyond, something airy and skyward. Dark, the receptive female, soft and inward turning, is associated with what is called immanence, a divine that lives within us and within all creation, accessible by clearing away barriers of consciousness, going deep, something grounded and earthy. If the light, active, male, hard, outward-moving energies are good, then so is the spirituality of transcendence. If the dark, receptive, female, soft, inward-turning energies are bad, then a spirituality of immanence is suspect. Moving beyond the physicality of human existence becomes good. Being rooted in the body and the reality of life on earth becomes bad. And historically, this is what happened. For spiritual seekers focused on the transcendent, the body is suspect. My own spiritual practice is based in yoga, whose ancient philosophy involved becoming so spiritually attuned to a divine beyond the body, so focused on transcendence, that the body's life was treated with great disrespect. We don't do it that way in modern Western yoga, mostly, but it's still around. Buddhists have been hard on the physical body in different times and places and still get this way from time to time, too. And so do Christians. Christianity was much influenced by the light and dark polarization of Greek thought. The Desert Fathers, much admired among early Christians, fasted and mortified the flesh in various ways to diminish the pull of the dark, sinful body on the light, transcending spirit. There were gender complications, too. In the non-canonical Gospel of Thomas, Jesus is quoted as assuring his disciple Peter that Mary Magdalene can enter the kingdom of heaven. Here's the quote. Simon Peter said to them, "Make Mary leave us, for females don't deserve life." Jesus said, "I will guide her to make her male, so that she too may become a living spirit resembling you males. For every female who makes herself male will enter the domain of heaven." It was necessary to go to great lengths to avoid condemning an entire half of the population in a strongly polarized association of dark receptive female soft immanent and bad, as opposed to light active male hard transcendent and good. Misogyny, the devaluation of the female dark receptive soft and immanent, ripened as Christianity brought its own philosophy in line with the Greek tradition. Women were relegated to the back of the Christian bus as the centuries rolled forward and tradition evolved. Interestingly, the version of Christianity that thrived in the early centuries in Ireland and spread across Europe after the collapse of the western part of the Roman Empire was not big on this polarization. Some women there were abbots, leaders of monastic houses for both women and men. In fact, legend has it that when the woman who was to become Saint Brigid, I guess her Gaelic pronunciation is Brigid, Saint Brigid was ordained in Ireland, the words used were the words reserved for ordaining a bishop. But maybe not just the words, the powers conferred on her strongly resembled those of a bishop. Gradually, the Greek-influenced Roman understanding of how to do the church gained ground among the faithful throughout Europe, including Ireland, and women passed again into subordination. This light and dark business is very deeply rooted in our culture. We see it in our hymns and readings, in the words of our own universalist and Unitarian prophets. And it's hard to get rid of because light is good, enlivening, exciting, an appropriate symbol for the arrival of insight, for growing knowledge, for increasing affection among people, and many other good things. Affirming dark, it makes no sense whatever to reverse the polarity of the past, to go to dark receptive female soft immanent good and active male hard transcendent bad. No, I don't think so. So where do we go in this time of increasing light, this season, with the promise of increased activity and all that male type stuff? Here is where I go, and you can see if you like it. First, everybody has both sides. The Chinese were right. Yin and yang complement one another within a circle of wholeness. Men are not all yang, and women are not all yin. Spiritual teaching moves both outward and inward. for we are embodied. We all face the challenge of living in this world as spirit beings with bodies, invited at least for this lifetime to make sense of our existence as animated matter. We can sit on the heights or we can plunge into the depths. Ultimately, it's the same spirit that touches us. Rather than pursuing the classical Greek ideal of striving to totally embody either the male or the female, the one and not the other, we can each appreciate the active, receptive, outward-moving, inward-turning, hard, soft, transcendent, and immanent aspects of ourselves, not cutting off any of it because it somehow doesn't fit some philosophical ideal. Second, the time of increasing light is part of a cycle that will return to a time of increasing dark, not only in the wheel of the year, but also in the ways of the world. What grows will decay and return to earth. In the season of increasing light, it is time to reflect on what is beginning in our lives, the impulses that are quickening within us, the urges to do or to be in some slightly different way. This is energy that is traditionally associated with the idea of being male. But it's also like being pregnant, not a male thing at all. We can simply leave behind the gender role stereotypes the ancient Greeks stuck us with, pursuing new and more varied imagery that invites everyone to beginnings, to nurturings, and to endings. I need to tell you a little more about Greed as a way of reclaiming some ancient light. Once upon a time, there was a goddess revered among the Celtic people who was called Greed. Celtic divinities did not specialize in particular subjects in the way Roman gods and goddesses did, but you can tell that Greed was really important because she's associated with poetry, metalworking, and healing. But not only that, with wild and tame animals, childbirth, abundance of harvests, and fear. She had three aspects: maiden, mother, and crone, or old one. These three aspects manifested during the cycle of the year, with the maiden arriving in spring to touch everything with her white wand and turn it green, growing into the mother for summer, time of ripening, aging into the crone, the harvester, and companion of the dying. Right now, at the midway point between the winter solstice and the spring equinox, now is the time when the crone is thought to die and the maiden to emerge, the ending of endings and compostings, the time of setting out on new beginnings. In the medieval Christian church in France, there were candlelight processions at this time that wound their way through cemeteries. Could that have been a holdover from the funeral of the crone? These processions are still held now inside the church, with candles blessed by the priest, which must be made of beeswax, but I digress. This is a time of initiations in Wiccan communities, when aspirants who have studied for a year and a day or some other period ceremonially move on to the next stage of their training. It's a time appropriate for commitments to new undertakings, new things that might have been envisioned at the winter solstice or at the dark moon. For those of you who might do such things, at your home altar, it is time to light a candle, meditate on it until the commitment forms itself into your mind, spirit, and body. Take up the candle and dance with it, and set it in a container of earth, affirming your intention. There is power in joining fire and earth. But to continue my story, Greed was a goddess before there was Christianity among the Celtic people. Apparently, there really was a powerful woman bishop among the earliest Irish Christians, and she apparently really was named Greed. Saint Greed, whose feast day is celebrated tomorrow, is listed as having been born in the year 453 and died in 523, her life straddling the 5th and 6th centuries of the Christian era. There is a story of her life, And it's a story that has some normal-sounding aspects. It's still not surprising that legends about this actual historical person have been handed down to us that remind us of stories of the gods. Her abbey was at Kildare, a place whose name means Church of the Oak, suggesting pagan connections. It has an eternal flame that may have been burning there before it became a place of Christian worship. She was reputed to have been able to give gifts of food that multiplied in the hands of the receiver, as if she were the goddess of abundant harvests. She was said to have tamed a wild boar. Another story features her taming a wild fox, as if she had goddess-like powers over nature. She has become the patron saint of poets, blacksmiths, travelers, boatmen, camel, and much else. Pictures of her show her with a lamp or candle, often a cow nearby. I like the idea that this goddess Briad did not die. She just went undercover by attaching herself to a human who became a saint. The ancient ways are not our ways. Still, the ancient stories are our stories in some sense. There is truth that calls to us from before this time, from before the time when all that thinking and philosophizing brought an unhealthy polarization to people's opinions of light and dark. In the Bible story of the creation, light emerges in relation to dark, and dark was God's creation too. Dark is good. In the Chinese tradition of yin and yang, both are needed for wholeness. In the story of the Celtic goddess, everything has its season, another way to affirm that more than one piece is needed for wholeness. People's lives follow nature through times of commitment and growth, to times of nurturing and ripening, to times of harvest, death, and decay. So there are three parts rather than only two. The divine is present within us in these cycles, herself beginning, ripening, and aging, modeling for us the truth and goodness of what is natural. We do not need to strive in some unnatural way to have contact with the divine, these stories say, for light and dark are both good. The cycle of life is real and firm. Let us live life and seek the divine in our living. May we let this season of increasing light lead us all to new commitments and new adventures, all the while embracing both the light and the dark in our own natures, being outward and inward looking, male and female, hard and soft, finding the holy both.